You're listening to The Bill Murphy Show, the music interview show featuring the best in the business. From behind the scenes, in the studio, and on the stage. Available by subscription for free on iTunes and at BillMurphyShow.com. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
With your new digital broadcast for this Monday, June 11th, 2012, the best in the business for sure. Been looking forward to today's guest for a long, long time. It brought to you by Lulu's Bait Shack, great live music, fresh Florida seafood, and much more, including those world-famous gigantic fishbowl drinks. Beach Place on A1A in the heart of Fort Lauderdale Beach. Also, our latest sponsors, the Rush Couture folks with their very hip, cool clothing line. Vitamin Water, an Into Energy drink. Please click on their links on our homepage and show them some love. Let them know that their support of The Bill Murphy Show is working. Today, we get into, as I mentioned, a guest I've been waiting to have on for a long, long time. This intro will take a little bit because we have to touch on all the points of his illustrious career. With me is Jason Beeler of Beeler Brothers Records and also formerly of Saigon Kick, a Miami-based band formed in 1990 with, I think, at my best count, six studio albums. They went gold in 1992 with The Lizard, hit number 12 on the Billboard chart with Love Is On The Way. He's now running Beeler Brothers Records label in, studio and apparel line. Very, very interesting with bands such as Soil, Stamina, Owl Stretching, In Ashton, Stereo Sight, among others. And we'll hear about, his favorite or most notable. Also Nonpoint and Skindred. For those of you metal fans listening that may be familiar with those guys, so he's very, very entrenched in the metal business. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing great, Bill. How are you?
Very cool, man. First question right off the bat as we go back to Saigon Kick. If gun to your head, you had to answer the question, yes or no, was Saigon Kick a hair band?
That's a big question. I guess from a volume of hair point, probably.
Okay. So that part of it, you guys qualified. So.
But, we really kind of got inspired by, like, seeing Jane's Addiction back in the day at the Cameo Theater when they opened up for Iggy Pop. And we were kind of the guys that were left over from the hair scene that couldn't actually get in any hair bands.
Ah.
And so we started, seeing bands like Soundgarden and Jane's Addiction and stuff like that. And that's kind of what I think drove us more than traditional hair metal stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, time-wise, you guys really started and got going at the tail end of the hair band era, although I know that bled into the 90s, but you guys kind of were at the tail end of that. It's funny because if you go to iTunes and you pull up your catalog, it says listeners also bought, and there's a whole slew of hair bands there, so I guess you can't avoid that.
Nah, I mean, it kind of is what it is. I mean, we were lucky enough to, get to tour with a bunch of different bands in the day. So, I mean, we did enough touring with some of the, bands like Rat and Ozzy and things like that. But we also got to tour with the Ramones and we toured with Cheap Trick. And, we made it very difficult to kind of slide into any one category. So
right.
The one that sticks is the hair metal one for the most part. So
right. And, at the risk of turning this into a This Is Your Life, Jason Beeler, interview, we have to touch on the Saigon Kick thing. And you sort of just mentioned it there. You touched on it, that the fact that you did play with other bands that were outside of your specific genre, even if you guys had a specific genre, the thing that kind of stood out for Saigon Kick was the diversity of this band, because there really wasn't one style. You never could say all the songs sounded the same. And how did that happen? Was that because there was so much collaboration among the band members in the writing process and so on?
No, I mean, I don't think there was any really thought process. I mean, I wish we were smart enough to really think it out. I mean, we were just always influenced by, everything from like the Beatles to the new wave of alt at the time, which was, like I said, Jane's Addiction or Soundgarden or what was happening in that thing. And we just kind of just wrote whatever we felt like writing. And I think that made it, in hindsight, made it really difficult for any particular label marketing arm to, put us anywhere in particular. And it made it really hard for journalists to write, this is that type of band. And
right.
So ultimately, and then, having that kind of, I like to think of it as the ballad that took down all of hair metal, the last one. so I did do a service for the country in some way.
sort of.
But, yeah. But that kind of in terms of most people's view of the band, is that that's what the band was, and you know, and I get why that is, and nothing that, look, we were a one or two hit wonder, depending on how you look at it, depending on what country you're counting the charts in. And, that's still a lot better than a no hit wonder.
Right, and again, one of those bands that was American born, more or less, and based, and then you ended up way more popular in other countries than the USA. Which one stood out as Saigon Kick's biggest fans, in your opinion?
I mean, it's pretty phenomenal that we became, for some reason, like, just massive in places like Indonesia.
Wow.
Which, from a travel standpoint, was just amazing. To go, you know, to Bali and have it paid for by your band is pretty impressive.
Wow.
And Jakarta and things like that. But we were playing literally, like, 25,000 seat, arenas ourselves. So that was always pretty cool. A little bit Spinal Tap-ish. It felt like, Sex Farm went to number one in Japan. We got to put the band back together.
We told them really a million times, Saigon Kick, then Puppet Show. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
But it was still, pretty awesome to get, Singapore and obviously Japan more than a few times. And
so you probably did, like, one-offs in very strange places.
We really got a chance to travel the world a bunch of times in a bunch of different capacities. One of the big things for me was, the first show I remember seeing was Ozzy Osbourne at Sunrise Musical Theater. On the Blizzard of Oz tour.
Right, I saw that too.
So, I remember my mom somehow got me tickets, and I was in the third row watching, that's the one that had Randy Rhoads, and it was this amazing thing, and I was just, that's when it dawned on me, like, I want to do that. And to go later and be opening up for Ozzy at the Budokan in Japan, which was a legendary venue from, like, the Cheap Trick Live at Budokan days, I became friends with Zakk Wylde, and, he had me on stage behind him, and kind of that full circle of, like, being a kid and a fan to being, on stage behind the guitar amp, watching, Ozzy and all this stuff. It was just an amazing kind of thing to get to do in terms of those cool life moments.
Crazy. That is just crazy. Now, for the sake of the newer generation that may be listening to this and are not familiar with Saigon Kick, and also for our generation that just haven't heard it in a long time, we're going to roll one of these. I know you're busy at work right now in the office, so I'm sure you realize that this song is 3 minutes and 52 seconds, so feel free to, roam around, take care of some business for a couple of minutes, but we're going to roll one of them, in particular my favorite Saigon Kick track, One Step Closer. Talk a little bit about how this one got born, and how much of the writing of this song is yours?
I think I wrote all of this one, actually. We did this record in Sweden, in Stockholm, actually, and this was right after Matt had left. So we were kind of in this really isolated, kind of strange suburb of Stockholm. Matt had left, and we were telling ourselves, well, Peter Gabriel left Genesis, so this should work out just fine.
Right.
Of course, missing the big picture.
Right.
So we just wrote this record. It was really kind of recorded it and wrote it as we went, and it was a great recording experience until we came back to reality and realized maybe we do need a frontman.
Well, a great memory nonetheless. Here's One Step Closer with Jason Beeler of Beeler Brothers Records and Saigon Kick on the Bill Murphy Show. One Step Closer, Saigon Kick, Jason Bieler with us. And again, I dug a little deeper into the catalog for that one, just because it's a personal favorite of mine. The folks that are familiar with Saigon Kick are obviously probably more familiar with your big hit, Love Is On The Way. Now, first, before we get into that, because I want to talk about the first time you heard yourself on the radio, Jason. One Step Closer, kind of, as you touched upon, was after the band was in sort of a little bit, I hate to use the word disarray, but you said Matt was gone and there was a little bit of a transformation going on there. You guys were in the business, in the heart of the music business's heyday, especially for this genre. So the typical politics and the direction conflicts were there. I'm sure you had A&R people arguing with the band on how to go. Was there a lot of that going on, and did you think it was very typical at the time?
I mean, we were really in this weird space because the guy that signed us is a kind of legendary A&R guy named Jason Flom.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, he's just a really kind of—he's the quintessential old school A&R guy, where he was like, you know, he doesn't really know per se what makes a hit, and he gives you kind of enough room to either hang yourself or hopefully come up with a, you know, a hit. So I think there was just a general state of like, we had this big song that was, you know, we're coming off a big hit, we were all the way over in Stockholm, and things weren't working out direction wise between us and Matt, and he was like, well, figure it out. You know, I mean, make a record that's, you know, make something great.
Yeah.
I mean, so it was really kind of, it's not like those kind of micromanaging situations where you hear about people sitting over your shoulder and telling you do this, do that, don't, you know, where, you know, we were kind of left to our own devices, which is probably a good and bad thing, and why that record is, you know, you have to be a fan of the band to really sit through a record.
Right.
Because it's really a strange, you know, combination of music for one record.
Yeah, and I get the impression, and again, just from listening, I mean, it's, you can put your own little biography together by listening and kind of get the idea, and correct me if I'm wrong, it kind of feels to me, not that this is a bad thing, but kind of feels to me like you guys hit the chart, got to number 12 with a ballad, and then came out swinging for the fences in the next one saying, all right, we're just going to get harder and heavier with this one now. Was there any sort of like revenge factor going on there?
I mean, I don't, not to contradict what you're saying, I mean, I guess maybe there's some of that, but I mean, for the most part, I mean, even our first record had the same kind of, you know, setup. I mean, there were some very heavy songs,
sure,
some very avant-garde songs, and some really, you know, kind of poppy ballad things, and that was kind of the formula, I think. You know, even when the Lizard was successful, that wasn't like a plan. We had gone to Mexico to shoot a video for one of the heavier tracks on that record, and while we were there, actually, I want to say it was you know, one of the local stations, it just started playing the ballad.
Right.
And it exploded. And it just, I mean, it was one of those things where immediately, like, you know, it was, the record was selling out of everywhere, and it was going up the charts, and the phones were going off. And, mm-hmm. you know, I just remember having that call with, you know, Doug Morris, who at the time was, you know, president of Atlantic. He was like, look, you have a hit. Either you pursue this or you don't, but, I mean, you know, the trying to be cool thing doesn't work.
Okay.
So, I mean, it wasn't like a conscious effort, nor did we try to have a hit. It was just kind of what we did, and all of a sudden that exploded, and, you know, we kind of wrote it at that point.
Very cool. So that leads me into the typical, I always try to ask this from as many guests as possible, because it's always fascinating to hear the answer. Now, was Love Is On The Way the first song you heard personally on the radio? And even if it wasn't, what was that feeling like to hear yourself in Saigon Kick on the radio for the first time? I know you have to remember where you were.
Yeah, I mean, I probably at home at my parents' house. You know, it was really weird the way the whole Saigon Kick thing happened, because we did everything wrong. I mean, we didn't have demo tapes, and we didn't have, you know, publicity photos. We just became, like, over this, I would say, maybe 6 month period, a really huge band down here. I mean, we were selling out the Button South like two nights in a row by ourselves. So we went from, like, being a bunch of guys who were working at sub shops on a Friday and played these shows over the weekend, and every label was there, and by Monday we had a massive record deal, and Michael Wagner was doing our record.
Wow.
And we were signed to Atlantic. So that part of it happened very, very quickly.
Incredibly accelerated word of mouth.
Absolutely. I mean, it was pretty cool thing. And it's happened down here. I mean, the same thing I think happened with Marilyn Manson.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there's different bands at different, the Collapsing Lungs, I remember, had a huge buzz, and, you know, Nuclear Valdez at one point.
Right.
You know, it just seems to be, which always makes me laugh when bands say there's no scene. I'm like, then there's no band.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, you guys are the scene, along with the handful of bands that you mentioned there. So that really touches on that. Now, for the folks that are missing out on Love Is On The Way, and we've talked about it, and we're going to play it at the tail end of the show. So after the outro and the goodbyes are done at the end, they'll consider it like a bonus track at the end of this podcast. For those of you who want to check it out, we'll close everything off with Love Is On The Way. But we'll move on to where things have evolved for you now. You've kind of kept yourself ingrained in the business. And you've, you know, stayed within the same sort of genre and or at least the same attitude of music. Beeler Brothers Records been around a little more than 10 years now and based in South Florida in Pompano Beach, correct?
Absolutely, yep.
And you have a couple of bands that you guys are, I don't know, are you into the management? Is this a 360 situation? Is that the new catch thing that's going on?
No, we're way past that. We're 720.
Oh, okay. Around and back again.
Wow. Exactly.
Wow. Okay. So it's all an all-encompassing sort of situation. No.
No. We actually don't do that. I mean, we on the label side. I mean, we keep it really simple. I mean, we sign bands that we love. We do pretty much straight up just on the recording side, joint venture deals with the band. So it's pretty much a 50-50 split. We don't sign merch rights or publishing rights. I mean, and you know, the whole philosophy is just sign stuff that we're humbled by and that we think is amazing. And again, I think that's part of the problem we run into as a label is some of the same things we ran into as a band was just that, you know, we're not a hardcore label, we're not a metal label, we're not a pop label. We have a pretty diverse roster, probably I dare say one of the most diverse rosters of any indie label around. And you know, that I think it's really cool just to be involved in music that we love. At the same point, it probably doesn't give you all the leverage of being like a Victory Records, which signs like everything that's very similar to a genre, so you mm-hmm. put all your bands on the same tours and things like that. But
well, I'm thinking that what you're saying is okay in today's world, because independent can actually I think it's becoming more and more independent in every sense as time goes by. You don't have to be pigeonholed into one sort of genre.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And how hands-on are you? And when I say that, I mean it literally. How much are your fingers on the console, at the mixing board, at producer, or are you just kind of oversee a bunch of other guys doing that kind of work?
We have a great guy that is our in-house engineer and producer here named Matt LaPlante, who's been with us for a number of years. It depends on the project, because sometimes, you know, we find things that are just amazing and we don't want to touch. I mean, last year we signed a band called Silent Film, who had the number one alternative record pretty much in the country last year, or one of them. And, you know, that was a record that was just amazing from start to finish, and they're from the UK, and, you know, that was just kind of like, we put it out.
Mm-hmm.
And other times we develop stuff. I mean, with the Nonpoint situation back in the day, we were really hands-on in the studio, and I produced a bunch of those records, and we worked together quite closely, and same with a band called Skindred
mm-hmm.
that we had. We did a lot of stuff. I mean, and they've become just massive. I mean, they just played in front of, I think, 65,000 people over the weekend in the Download Festival in the UK.
Wow.
So, you know, it depends on the artist. I mean, we've always kind of, it really depends on the situation and where they are in development. And it's not the kind of situation where if we sign you, I'm your producer and you're going to be listening to me. It's if things work out and we want to work together, then great. If there's other people that should be involved, you know, we create that kind of environment. I mean,
uh-huh. And I know this is probably a tough question to answer because it varies so much from situation to situation, but how much of a balancing act do you have to walk between sort of preserving the sound of the band when they come to you and putting the quote-unquote Beeler Brothers sound on the band? And is there any sort of like give and take with that?
I mean, our real philosophy is just, you know, when I put something on musically, if I'm blown away by it, that's my only criteria.
Okay.
I mean, you know, if I feel like I'm a fan of this band and I can help participate in, you know, getting them to a wider audience, or pulling some of our connections or using our tools to help accelerate their development, that's all I'm concerned with. I mean, we're not so focused on a sound as much as just being humbled by something great. I mean, you know, we all know that experience of listening to something musically and just going, this is just, you know, amazing. It moved me, you know, in some way or another. And that's kind of how we operate.
And I guess in a perfect world, if the band is agreeing to work with you, then that means that they probably want some of the sound that you've incorporated on other records on their record, too. So that hopefully works out.
You know, we've worked with bands that absolutely wanted to work and do certain things together, and we've worked with bands that have completely kept separate from that. I mean, we had a band called Fiction Plane, which was probably most famous for the singer was Sting's son. So mm-hmm. they were on the Police tour and
wow.
all that kind of stuff about two or three years ago. And that was, you know, out, you know, that was not our sonic thing. It wasn't, you know, I mean, they made their record how they made their record is a brilliant record. And, you know, it's on a kind of case-by-case basis, really. It,
sure.
Depends.
Absolutely. Now, you sent me a track from one of the bands you're working with now called Owl Stretching and a song called Satellite. Tell me a little bit about it, and we'll roll this and kind of introduce it to the audience.
Well, it's a project I've been working on, actually, with the producer here, Matt, and a couple of guest musicians we brought in. So we've been doing some writing and experimenting along the way to have some fun again and get back into the writing process. So,
So this is, almost sort of a solo project for you.
Kind of.
Very
kind
cool.
Kind of a solo project, without having the balls to name it after myself. This way I can blame it on the band.
Let's take a listen to it. And a very, very nice intro and an example of some fantastic production work on here. This is Satellite from Owl Stretching. We'll listen closely to it and dissect it with Jason Beeler right after this on The Bill Murphy Show. Owl Stretching and Satellite with Jason Beeler from Beeler Brothers Records. And that's another one of the projects he's working on at the time. Really, really great sounding stuff. I want to get into the nuts and bolts of it because I always have, you know, some producer types listening and people in the business and maybe guys up and coming that want to pick up on some chops. So let's start with the vocal sound on that. Very unique Well, unique, but also something that seems to be trending. There's a, I want to guess vocoder. I want to guess, I'm wondering what's going on there with those sort of dissonant, sort of harmonic things going on in the vocal track there. Can you describe a little bit about what's happening there?
Probably what you're hearing is a bit of the much maligned auto-tune.
Okay.
But what we were trying to do, I mean, I think it's kind of neat when you use it as an effect.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't really so much used to hard-tune the vocals.
Well, that's what I'm going to say. You weren't correcting anything there with auto-tune. You were kind of using it in a creative way. There's more than one note, though, going on. There's almost a constant harmony going on, and you're saying that that's you built that with auto-tune?
No. I mean, all the harmonies were kind of built, you know, the old-fashioned way.
Okay.
And then we would just, you know, take certain things and you know, if you hit that plug in a certain way, it kind of does sometimes some interesting effects. I mean, effects that either make some people cringe and want to kill you.
Oh, I see. So that's where you're getting that quick bend, which sort of gives it an electronic effect.
Right, on one or two of the vocals, again, not on all of them, but there's a hard setting, you know, on the, so it's just grabbing a note and kind of really rapidly tuning it.
Right.
Or actually, not so much tuning it, but removing any kind of vibrato.
I see.
And it has a kind of cool effect, at least that we thought.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, and not, I hate to use the comparison, but just for the sake of what we're doing here, in Nickelback, I think in a couple of their big hits, you kind of listen to that vocal track and go, what's going on there? Is there some sort of weird effect, or is there like two tones coming out of his voice at the same time?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Is that something like what you were going for?
I think the cool thing about this is that, I mean, there's really no objective. You know, I kind of built this entire infrastructure and then decided, you know what? I mean, as a kid, this is everything I ever wanted. I have a world-class recording studio. I don't have to do this anymore for any other reason other than for kind of fun. And let's go in and, you know, do whatever we want to do.
Right.
Not, you know, so I mean, that's kind of where most of this stuff is coming from. We sit in there, we kind of tweak stuff until we feel like, you know, we're happy. And then, you know, I've been really impressed that people have, I've been kind of thrilled that people have responded really positively to it. And it's kind of taken on a little bit of a life of its own. I mean, we didn't name this under the premise of a commercial success, which hence, you know, owl stretching.
Sure.
Yeah. Which was just kind of an ode to, you know, that was the original name that the Monty Python guys were going to use. so when Monty Python throws it out for being too ridiculous, you know you're not like a marketing genius.
Right. And you get to pay tribute to the great Monty Python group anyway. So that's
exactly.
That's awesome. All right, so just a couple more of the technical, a couple more things in the technical side of this. I'm curious to know, now you already touched upon the fact that you're using auto-tune. I know you have an SSL console at the studio, no?
We have a lot of SSL preamps. We also have a full-on Neve.
Oh, okay. Oh, even better. Okay, cool. So you've kind of held on to that, the importance of what you guys were doing back in the Saigon Kick days, and that's how strong and powerful and thick and organic the analog part can sound. But I mean, I'm sure there's you can't resist using some of the advantages that the computer gives you. So how much of a combination is there in Pro Tools and et cetera, and the computer kind of tied into the analog sound there? How much of a balancing act goes on there?
I mean, a lot. I mean, we we're fortunate that we have amazing actual real world hardware here.
Mm-hmm.
So from APIs to SSLs to, you know, we have pull tech EQs and all the compress. I mean, everything you can name, we're really fortunate to have those tools. And I think when you combine them with the software world, and, you know, it's pretty amazing. I mean, the bottom line is the Neve is this, you know, 50,000-pound beast with about 8 billion feet of wiring in it. And when that thing heats up the right way and, you know, the audio fairies bless you, there's nothing that sounds like it.
Wow.
You know, it's just a weird combination of stuff. But when, you know, when you can take that information and record that into a, you know, Pro Tools and then, you know, manipulate it any way you want instantaneously. And, you know, when we were doing stuff originally, you know, it was on 2-inch tape and you pretty much wanted to get your thing across in the first two or three versions and you had to be able to play it, you know, or else you were going to start to eat through the tape. And just a different mentality as to where now I think everything's kind of more modular and you can look at things differently and kind of, so we try to use a little bit of both.
So you use as much of the best of the both worlds as you possibly can. I would gather it's a little expensive to keep a Neve console maintained, and if something goes down on that, has it become just a real major pain in the ass?
We have a guy that comes down from Nashville who's amazing. He's one of the few guys in the country that still works on them. So, I mean, we constantly have a maintenance guy here every two or three weeks. just going through the basic stuff, and then we have this amazing guy who comes down and works on the power supplies and the different, the whole thing has to be recapped, and it's intensive. It's a lot easier just to use Pro Tools.
Right, absolutely. But it seems that you're using just enough of both things, and you've got some great sounding stuff. Jason Beeler, I really appreciate it. Before we go, I'd like you to just let us know what's happening in Beeler Brothers Records world, bands to keep an eye out for, who's on tour, who's got a new record that you want to let people know about. Go ahead and plug away, brother.
Oh, awesome, man. Well, the studio's been on fire lately. I mean, we have some amazing people in here. We've had Justin Bieber in just recently, J-Lo. We have Ron Nevison coming in this week.
Wow.
Like a legendary producer. So, I mean, that stuff's been really, the studio's just been on fire. And from a label standpoint, I mean, we have this band In Ashton from Canada that's got a new single coming out that I think actually Y100 is going to be playing later today.
How about that?
So we're pretty pumped about them. We have a band from Finland called Stamina.
Right.
That is like the Metallica of Finland, and the record was produced by this guy named Joe Barisi, who's also a legendary producer and has done stuff like Tool and Queens of the Stone Age and Weezer. And that record's coming out July 17th.
And I think if you get on BeelerBrothers.com, you can see sort of a quick video sample of Stamina on there. There's something sitting right on there, right?
Absolutely. And another one of our bands, Look Right Penny, just got on the Warped Tour.
Wow.
So, yeah, things are firing on all cylinders here, man. We're pretty fortunate and excited.
Very nice. So I really appreciate you coming on and exposing everything and kind of opening us up to the world of Beeler Brothers. And folks can get online at BeelerBros.com. Now, that's BeelerBros.com. And kind of learn more if you want to. And if you got a band that you want these guys to produce or you want to turn them on to something they need to know, that's your headquarters there to get in touch with them. Before we kind of close things off, there's a little bit of rumblings going around, rumors. I guess they don't ever stop. But will we see a Saigon Kick reunion of sorts at all in the future, in your mind?
Well, I can't believe, first of all, you're not going to talk about my NHL future. That's what's really disturbing.
Your NHL future, go please, okay. Because I'm an NHL guy. You know that.
Of course. I've heard that. Well, maybe I don't have an NHL future, so we should probably go to the Saigon Kick thing. I mean, we've been talking. All the guys have been actually talking again, and there's been a bunch of really interesting festival offers. I mean, the good thing, it's like, yeah, I remember that Indiana Jones quote, like if you bury something in the sand long enough, it creates value.
Sure.
So that's kind of like where our career is at. You know, we've been, we don't do it for 25 years, all of a sudden there's some kind of value to it.
Right.
And, so there's been a lot of cool, interesting festival offers, and everybody's talking, and we'll see. I mean, I think it's looking better than it ever has. So we'll see if it makes sense.
Right, and have you and Matt Kramer kind of patched things up since it seems like there was a little bit of personal conflict with you guys throughout the career of the band, almost a la Spinal Tap. Right?
It was more than Spinal Tap. It makes Spinal Tap look like a straightforward documentary. Yeah, it was, it's like anything. I mean, I think it has to get silly before it can get better, and we pride ourselves on the ability to take it to a ridiculous level. So our hatred has seemed, to have at least slightly, tuned down a touch. We keep saying, like, we buried the hatchet. Unfortunately, it was in each other's back.
Yeah.
Wow. We're cool, I mean, at the moment. I think everyone's grown up a bit, and time, has a way of... not healing all wounds, but
Of course. And as you get older and more mature, you guys can. I'm sure things will be just fine with you guys. All right, final question: will the Los Angeles Kings wrap up the Stanley Cup tonight?
You know, I'm a DeBoer guy, so I have to hope against hope that I'm glad Pete pulled off two in a row here. And you're in one of those weird situations there. I would think if you're the Kings, you're starting in the back of your head's got to be creeping. There's no way we're going to let this slip,
right?
And the Devils are like have nothing to lose, so odds are the Kings are going to win, but I'd like to see something happen.
I'm kind of torn because not only am I a DeBoer guy, but he's a friend. I really, really appreciate the guy, and I'd love to see him pull off this comeback from three games down. It just seems a little far-fetched. And, I mean, regardless of the outcome, the guy deserves a huge pat on the back because he's done a great job with New Jersey. So.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And he was down here, and, like I said, my wife and him, they were just awesome people, and he's a great guy, and the fact that he's where he's at now is well deserved. So, either way, it's been a massive success for him. So, I'm thrilled for him.
Absolutely, fellow hockey fan, we better stop this conversation before we alienate everybody. You know how unpopular hockey is. So,
exactly. Talk about underground.
Exactly, Jim. More underground than the label, right? Jason Beeler, I really appreciate it, buddy, and I'll catch you at Panthers training camp when we're both walk-ons there.
Absolutely.
We'll see what happens with our NHL futures.
Yeah, we will definitely see what happens.
I'm sure that'll be quickly over with. All right, brother, carry on. Have a great time. We'll talk to you soon, and appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Bill.
Take care. That's Jason Beeler, Beeler Brothers Records and Saigon Kick. Really appreciate him coming on. It's a long overdue show. Continue to listen, like, and share. We really appreciate it. You're keeping the show alive. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, visit our sponsors. Show them some love. Catch you next time. BillMurphyShow.com.
Subscribe to the Bill Murphy Show podcast for free at iTunes. You can post comments about today's show, listen to archived episodes, and like the show on Facebook by visiting BillMurphyShow.com. A presentation of Bill Murphy Productions.
Wipes the tears.